Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. I'm Karen, and as usual, I'm joined by...
Kristen! Good morning, everyone.
Hello.
Evening. Afternoon.
Whenever you're listening to this.
It's morning here.
Yes.
And I don't usually do mornings well, so...
Yeah, we're both a little sleepy.
Good morning.
As an added bonus, this is episode 3, take 2.
Take 2. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, you all missed an episode. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to take full responsibility for losing our previously recorded episode, and, you know, I'm convinced, though, that you are not a podcaster slash a podcast until you've lost an entire episode.
It's one of those things that happens to... everybody.
Yeah, it's like what do they call that? Like not a hazing ritual, although that's my computer hazed us.
Jerk. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm not talking bad about you guys.
Please.
No, it's initiation.
Yeah, initiation.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've really made it now.
Yep.
Episode
moving right
three,
along.
Take 2. So yeah, I think we're going to be okay. I don't think this episode's going to sound weird or anything. Kristen might know a little bit more than she did the first time we talked about this, but, honestly, my memory is so bad that
I know, right?
That it's not going to matter. It could be brand new and fresh and maybe even funnier than the first time.
Who
and
knows?
You guys will never know. We'll know.
Right? You'll never know.
Okay, so, yeah, today we're going to be talking about Rick Riordan Presents, all the books that have come out already, and the upcoming ones. I'm going to talk about the books and the series that I've read, the ones that I haven't gotten to yet, and, like I said, the ones that are coming up. So I'm actually pretty excited to talk to you guys about that, because there is so much to get through. And on that note, Kristen's going to do the news today, because you're going to get sick of my voice later, I promise.
So, yeah, let's start out with a couple of reminders. First of all, Tristan Strong Keeps Punching is out now, available. Check your local bookstores, whatever, you know, order books wherever you order them, all that fun stuff. I wanted to mention, I know I mentioned this the first time around, the publishing industry is currently experiencing some supply chain problems. So, if you have books on your list of presents to buy for Christmas or anything coming up, get them soon and be ready. Because, yeah, they're kind of all looking forward and seeing that they've gonna have problems getting their hands on things. And so, yeah, basically every author that I follow is like, yeah, guys, if you're gonna order books, order them now. So just a warning. All right, next reminder. Daughter of the Deep, the U.S., release date moved to October 26th. So don't spoil things for people who can't read the book yet. Keep your spoilers to yourself for a little while longer.
Yes.
You can do it. We have faith.
Subjectify is going to... Why am I saying it like the website? So I'm doing it. I'm going to do the review for Daughter of the Deep on Subjectify. And that's going to go up on the 26th, even though a lot of other people have the book and have read it and everything. But I just wanted to stay true to the U.S. release date for that. So there will be no spoilers from us before then. And even my review is going to be spoiler free. So if you guys want to check that out just to see what you're getting into, it'll be up there on October 26th.
Alrighty. Moving right along. Reed Riordan did a profile on the Tristan Strong villain, King Cotton. And you'll see the link in the show notes. This dude is creepy.
Yeah.
He looks like a creepy, what's his face?
Colonel Sanders.
Yes, Kentucky Fried Chicken. There's just that, or he kind of has, like, it's funny because he doesn't really look like it, but he's got a little bit of that Leonardo DiCaprio from Django feel to it. Like, he just looks scary.
Yeah, he does. And he's, like, got weird vine tentacles and stuff, so...
Yeah.
It's not great.
Ugh. So check that out. Moving right along, Cursed Carnival hit the New York Times bestseller list, which means that all of those authors are now New York Times bestsellers, if they weren't already.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty, I mean, that's fun.
I would be stoked.
Right? I mean, plus, it's really, I don't know how easy or hard it is for a book of short stories to rank like that, but that's, like, it's awesome that they did. Like, I've never paid attention to others who have ranked high or low on the New York Times bestseller list for stuff like that. But, like, that's awesome that that many authors can contribute short stories and the book does that well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not always the case because sometimes people, you know, they want everything from, like, one author. But, like, occasionally you'll skip over the ones where you're like, oh, it's just a short one. Okay.
Yeah.
But, no, like, that's just really cool. I think that's awesome. And yay for them. All the authors.
That's awesome. They're all super talented and really deserve it. So I'm excited.
And we're going to spend all day talking about
them. Yes. All day. You will be here for 8 hours. Just
not
kidding.
That long. Not that long. Okay. So moving right along, we attended the Daughter of the Deep virtual event, and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Words are hard.
It was a lot of fun, actually, and really, like, I wasn't sure what to expect out of it, like whether he was just going to be talking. I've attended a couple of his tours before in person, and he usually does like a slideshow presentation and a quick little talk, and then he'll take questions from the audience and stuff. And this felt like really dynamic still, like even though it was just virtual, there was a lot going on, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we learned a few things, just learned a few things about the book, as well as just the deep sea, which was good fun, too.
That's true.
Mysterious Island and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea both inspired this book, which was kind of news to us.
We knew about the 20,000 Leagues, right. But Mysterious Island, I had no idea.
I still am not entirely certain what that is.
Okay, I wasn't going to admit that, but I'm glad you did.
It's okay.
I don't either.
Do your research. Let us know if it's something we need to be checking out.
Yeah.
Because I think we all kind of understand that 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is inspiration for this book. It makes enough sense. So, like, our brains didn't need to wrap our mind around, but it's cool to know that there's something else that kind of, you know, got him going and got him, you know, writing. So that's good fun. We also were treated to an interview with Robert Ballard. His memoir, Into the Deep, is all about deep sea diving and getting into, you know, looking at wrecks, I believe.
Uh-huh.
He was the man who discovered the Titanic wreck, right?
Yes, that little known shipwreck, the Titanic.
Just that
he
one.
He discovered it.
Yeah.
This guy was so cool. Like, I really enjoyed listening to him talk. He's super smart. He has, like, 4...
Degrees,
yeah.
I think it was like geology, chemistry,
physics,
and something else.
Biology or something?
Maybe.
That would make sense. Yeah. I don't entirely remember. But yeah, he was super cool. And he talked about having like ADHD and dyslexia. And I was like, you're 100% son of Poseidon. like,
just admit it right now on camera. Let's do it. Yeah.
But he seemed really excited to talk about his job and stuff, and Rick seemed really excited to talk to them. Of course, like, this is the guy who did the, it's not sensitivity reading, right? It's like, he read the book to make sure the facts were right in Daughter of the Deep.
Correct, yeah. Beta reader?
Something like that. It's basically, like, fact checker sort of thing to make sure that, you know, it all lined up and it was realistic enough. And, like, if you can get the guy who discovered the Titanic to do that for you, like, life made.
Yeah, you've made it big time.
Not that Rick hasn't already made it big time, like, 1,000 times before, but I think he was, like, nerding out during this and I was excited too.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know how there are things that you don't really realize you're a super nerd about until, like, you get access to, like, a thing?
Yeah.
That, I feel like that's, like, Rick and the sea.
Yeah.
Like, now it's, like, his inner, like, kid comes out when he starts talking about his dives and, like, all this cool stuff that he's gotten to see and, like,
Or you start talking to somebody about something you're passionate about and you don't think you're that crazy about it until they just have that blank look on their face, like, nobody knows the information that you know. Like, this is kind of extra. And you're like, oh, sorry.
Oops. I thought everybody loved this thing as much as
that's kind of our daily lives.
Right? Like. I was going to say. Yeah. Pretty much happens all the time.
Yeah.
All right. So, the things that we did, we also saw a slideshow about octopuses.
Yes.
Which was very cool.
And kind of creepy.
Yes.
They're a little weird. I mean, I love them. They're awesome. But they're kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very informative slideshow. All right. We also learned a lot about the Disney Plus feature film of Daughter of the Deep that was optioned. Ta-da! Big news! Yeah.
Sparkle sounds.
I know, right?
I just did like jazz hands.
Fireworks! Yeah, these are firework noises. Just play along. Rick will be writing the script. He's currently writing the script.
Yes.
And will have a lot of say in the process. Yeah. So, again, Rick is being brought in to answer all the questions and help them get the right interpretation of this material, which is awesome. We love to see it. We will love to see it. Yeah. We will watch it a million times, I'm sure.
And I think this, I mean, I haven't read the book yet. Sorry. I'm getting to it. And life is very busy at the moment.
It's true.
However, from what I know of the book, I think it's a perfect fit for Disney Plus. Like, I think that's a great Disney Plus streaming movie.
I mean, they do a lot of this type of thing in general, just Disney does, where they take, like, something that people don't get to see or something that people, you know, don't necessarily have access to, and they'll flip it just a little bit. And that's it's creativity in general, but I do think that this is a really good fit for Disney Plus.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I haven't read the book yet either, but I'm still excited. Adaptations are fun, and especially Rick adaptations. They're the best. Speaking of Rick adaptations, the Percy Jackson Disney Plus TV show is still in the works, and we did get some more information about that as well. We might be getting more backstory for the characters and their relationships than the books were able to, which I think is just, it's just a result of having more time and being able to show and not tell. Like, with a book, you have to tell everything because you don't have that opportunity to just show things on camera. So I can understand how a lot of the, like, stolen glances and things can cut back. Like, you don't need to explain all of that, and so therefore you have room to do more history, more backstory, which I think is awesome.
Flashbacks and stuff like that. I love that kind of stuff. Whenever I look at adaptations or any new thing in, like, a franchise or a series, I always am interested in how they're going to expand the world. I think that's, like, that's my favorite thing. A lot of you guys know, like, I came from Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, and surprise, Teen Wolf is getting a movie. And the thing I'm most excited about is, are we going to see new monsters? Are we going to meet new people in Beacon Hills that we didn't know existed before? Like, any way that the universe can expand and grow bigger so that there's more room for us to explore, like, I am all about it. And the thing with movies and television is, like, they're inherently different from books. They have to be. So you're always going to have to change something, you know, something not necessarily might be different from the book, but it could be cut from the book, or they could add something from the book that we didn't know was necessarily there, but is, like, inside Rick's head. And to me, that's just the most exciting part.
I'm not going to lie. Just now, when you were talking about all the people we haven't met, I was like, could we meet Greenberg? But that's a totally different podcast, and we're not going there. Yeah. But for all you Teen Wolf fans, you know what I'm talking
about. That would be hilarious.
We also learned that the Disney Plus show might start filming next summer in 2022.
Might.
Which, if it did, would mean that we would probably see it in 2023.
Yeah. But with COVID and all that other stuff, production is just really weird right now.
There's a lot of question marks, so it's possible, but we don't know for sure. So just stay tuned and, you know, you'll find out from us and Rick what's going on as we get closer and closer to, hopefully, that start date. It's coming.
I mean, before we get filming, we're going to get casting, so that's going to be exciting.
Which is going to be everywhere, so you'll hear about it, I'm sure. Yeah, no. Very exciting, very exciting. We also learned about the Kane Chronicles adaptations that are going on over at Netflix. Just a quick reminder, those are going to be movies, like standalone movies for each.
It's going to be, yeah, because the series is a trilogy, so they're going to try to make all three movies, but it'll just depend on how well it's received.
Right. So for right now, we know we're getting one.
Yeah.
Depending on how well it does, we could get the rest.
Yeah.
Good to know. They're still working on the script, but it has been confirmed that it's a live-action adaptation. They're not doing animation. I guess the key art or something came out, and it kind of confused people.
Yeah, I think I saw... I'm not really sure where it's from, to be honest, but I have seen some, like, it looked official artwork that was... It was like an illustration kind of thing, so it looked like it could have been animated, and I guess that had been floating around enough for Rick to confirm that it is live action, which is cool. Like,
yeah,
we've talked about this before, I think. Maybe it was on the last episode, I don't know. But we're, you know, huge fans of animation, and Kristen wrote an article on Hypeable quite a few years ago about how Percy Jackson would be amazing as an animated show. Still stand by that.
Yep, I still think it's true.
100%. And I think that if they wanted to do maybe one of the spinoff series or like Magnus Chase or something like that as an animated show, I think it would be killer. Like, between the Dragon Prince and Korra and Avatar and a lot of those stuff, like, that's the right style, that's the right, like, attitude and tone for the show. I think it would be amazing.
I do too. And who's to say that we may not get one of those 15 years down the line? I mean, even with the live action adaptations upcoming, like, people are constantly reimagining old books, and, you know, how many Pride and Prejudice adaptations do we have now? Like, a lot.
Yeah.
So, it's always a possibility for somewhere down the line that somebody gets inspired and says, like, this would make a great animated series or animated movie, like, let's do it. So,
yeah.
I still think, yeah, that would be a really, really fun way to bring Rick's work to life.
The good thing, though, about The King Chronicles being live action is the diversity of the cast in front of the camera, because Rick is really passionate about that. And I think that, you know, Netflix has made some strides to be more diverse and everything. And considering this is Egyptian mythology and the two main kids are biracial and everything, it should be interesting, and I hope they really live up to the expectations I have for the casting.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity, and yeah, we'll see how they handle that. Moving right along, we heard the big announcement straight from Rick's lips that Nico D'Angelo is getting a standalone novel, and it is the next book the world of Percy Jackson.
It's been a little while since we heard this news, and I'm still wrapping my head around it.
I still get a little chill. It's still exciting. I mean, Nico is definitely the character that people want to know more about and want to get his own story and dig into all of that. So we were excited. I know you were all excited. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
We will be doing a more detailed episode on this soon, where you'll get to hear our thoughts and all that jazz. But we did learn that it will be co-written. So Rick is writing it with Mark Oshiro, who you may know his book Anger is a Gift. They're a very talented writer. We also learned a bit about their writing process. Rick wrote the outline. Mark then made notes on it, and now Mark is making his first pass at a first draft. Rick will write the second pass, and then they'll continue to just kind of trade it back and forth until we have a finished product.
Yeah.
And Nico comes to visit all of us.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
This is really interesting to me, because this is the first time Rick has ever co-written a book with somebody, and... like you said, Mark is a really talented writer. They've written a couple of different books, and I have a lot of faith in them as a writer, and they really, really care about Nico. Like, deep dive, Mark is part of the LGBTQIA+ community, and I think it's going to be really good, which is the reason why Rick wanted to co-write the book with them to begin with, because he's, you know, a straight white cis man, so he can't really get into Nico's head the same way somebody who has lived those experiences can. And I think that it's, you know, Nico is kind of his baby, like a lot of these characters are. And I think Nico, he's always been partial to him because the fans have taken such, like, love with Nico. So for him to be able to hand it over to somebody is a big deal, and I don't think he does that lightly. So I have a lot of faith in Mark and in this book. And I'm just, yeah, I'm really excited to see it. I have a lot of thoughts on what this could mean for the future of Percy Jackson and Rick's, like, career and stuff like that, which we'll wait until the next episode, two episodes from now. I think we're going to do a big breakdown of what this could all mean and everything. So you'll just have to wait. I'm such a tease.
But it is a very exciting prospect, him sharing writing credit on this. When you're thinking about, like, co-written books, it's a whole new, you know, it's a whole new thing. It's a whole new animal to tackle.
Because, trust me, I know.
She does. She definitely does. So, I mean, it's just interesting to see that this is a challenge he wanted to take on in addition to his own writing and the Disney Plus writing and the screenwriting, yeah. You know, like, all that stuff. It's just another thing that Rick is like, you know what? Let's do this. So I think that's awesome. We will likely be looking at a 2023 release date for that book, which has no title, which is just, this is just a preliminary announcement. It's coming. We don't know what it is yet, but yeah. We will. And once we do, you will know.
Yeah. And Mark said that they're 30,000 words into the book, which is like halfway through. And that was a week ago. So maybe it's 31,000 now. Just kidding.
It could be.
Probably writes faster than I do. But yeah. So, I mean, that's really exciting. And I think once they see what the book shapes out to be, we'll have a title. And
2023 is going to be a big year for Percy Jackson.
It's going to be nuts, and I'm so excited. It's going to be hard to wait until then, but I think there's going to be a lot to talk about, as we'll see in a few minutes when I talk about all the Rick Riordan Presents books.
Right. Like, I can't quite put my finger on when we're expecting Kane Chronicles because Netflix is insane and they don't tell you anything ever. It's top secret until, ta-da, it's done. It's like Beyonce. Here you go. Yeah. Because, you know, we don't necessarily know when to expect Kane Chronicles, we could be getting that movie and the Disney Plus series and Nico all in the same year.
Oh my God.
Like, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
People wonder how, like, actors have, like, four movies that come out in the same year, and it's like, people are like, whoa. Yeah. Like, they must have. No, it's just all that, you know, precursor work that they have to do to get it to theaters, and then they all kind of stack up on top of each other and ta-da, you know, you've got four Jennifer Lawrence movies coming out in 1 year. It's the same thing here. Like, you can tell these are all just different irons in the fire that he's been working on, and then 2023,
especially,
man.
The Percy Jackson show, like, that's been in the works, and Kane Chronicles have been in the works since like 2019, so now in 2023, 4 years later, when they come to fruition, it's going to be like, whoa, I'm going to have so much to write about on Subjectify.
Everything's coming up, Rick, in 2023. So we'll just keep looking forward to that, and a lot to be excited about. Last but not least, Rick is working on other things related to Irish mythology, which in Cursed Carnival, we got our first glimpse at him writing in the world of Irish mythology. And if you haven't picked that up or read that story yet, it's very interesting. We did a whole episode about the book, so, you know, go back and listen, but it's a little violent. So I'm interested to see what he does with the big world, like, not just this, you know.
And whether it's related to this or something else. We really have no information right now.
Yeah, it's he is working on a new series based around Irish mythology. It's probably going to be a trilogy, but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, the only reason why I said that was because all of the Percy Jackson books have been five books, but everything else he's written has been three. So Magnus Chase, Kane Chronicles, those have all been trilogies. And I think that aside from Percy Jackson, he tends to write in trilogies. Unless Percy is just like, $5 or nothing.
I was going to say, unless he's super inspired and has, you know, all the plans. So it's always possible we could get more than that. But expect maybe expect or hope for a trilogy and you'll just be pleasantly surprised
if it becomes. I mean, this is a little inside baseball, but like it could also depend on the contract he has from Disney and all of that kind of stuff. But I think I remember him saying at some point that writing 5 books in a series is very difficult. Like, as you can imagine, it's 2 extra books to spread over, you know, a huge arc and everything. So trilogies are a little bit easier because you literally have a beginning, middle, and end. So I'm going to put money, not a lot of money, but some money on a trilogy.
Which is good fun. And I will happily read the trilogy.
Yes.
So that pretty much wraps it up for news. If you have discovered anything or anything you think you would like to hear us talk about regarding the news or anything else, make sure to reach out to us on all the different platforms that we're on, which we'll give you that info later. But that pretty much moves us on to our discussion today. And I am going to toss it over to Karen. Here you go.
Thanks. Caught it.
Toss the mic.
You tossed a little ball and I caught like a huge one in both my hands. That did not work out very well. Also, can we pause here really quick to tell everybody that I got a new mic? I don't know if you can tell.
Yes, she did.
I feel like my audio is definitely going to be better. So please.
It's all sparkly and new.
Yeah,
and
it matches the color of the podcast. I got it to be like a dark, like tealish aqua color. Because I just had it to, I had to match it to the podcast.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, my audio was fine, but it wasn't up to my standards. So hopefully this is a little bit better and we sound better in general. I had to get up to your level, Kristen, because your mic always sounds good. She has a great podcasting voice.
Oh, shucks.
Okay. Yes, let's talk about Rick Riordan Presents now. Rick Riordan Presents is a beast. It is Rick's imprint about mythology, and it basically was born out of everybody always asking him, when are you going to do this mythology? When are you going to do that mythology? I remember the questions he used to get on social media and him being like, I don't feel like I'm the right person to talk about, you know, West African like mythology or Chinese mythology and stuff like that, which is totally fair. And is just, I mean, it would be a lot of work to like become enough of an expert in that in and of itself. But even aside from that, not being from that culture, not growing up on those stories, it's not something that he wanted to touch. And that's something that I really, really respect about him. So instead, he started a brand new imprint, which has been doing amazing, and all of the books coming out of Rick Riordan Presents are based in mythology of other cultures, and they're from authors of color and authors who have grown up hearing those stories, who have lived that culture, who know what it's like to be like their characters. So this is all own voices, basically, to use the book world terminology, which, again, just I really respect that. They have 14 authors signed to Rick Riordan Presents, 9 series published, 9 books optioned for film and TV, and there's more in the pipeline.
I mean, that's awesome. I'm not surprised that 9 of those books have been optioned for TV and film, like, or 9 of those series or whatever. That doesn't shock me, because I feel like these books lend themselves very well to adaptations. Like, there's so much going on, and they're so vivid. I mean, I haven't even read them, but just, like, seeing the covers and learning about them and hearing about the mythologies and all the things that they're working into these stories, like, it just seems like a no-brainer that they, of course these would make great TV. Of course this would make a great movie, so I'm really excited for all of them. I'm sure they're geeks.
Yeah. Plus, you have Rick's built-in audience to begin with. A lot of people who read Percy Jackson are going to read these books, you know, us included. So, it's smart business to get on board with these. And I think with people really understanding that Hollywood has been whitewashed for so long, how important it is to show kids, especially, the diversity of the world, not only for the kids who are of these cultures to see, you know, themselves represented on screen, but also kids who might not be aware of this entire world of mythology, literally, or worlds of mythology. You know, if they don't know it exists, this could be their window into that. And as somebody, as a kid who was obsessed with mythology when I was younger, it's just such a great world to live in with magic and gods and like all this crazy stuff. I mean, it's probably why we're doing this podcast today.
I was gonna say, Karen's no longer interested in mythology at all.
No.
Just when she was younger.
It was just a phase.
Not a face. Hashtag no. Not a face.
Hashtag not a face. Is that going to be our hashtag no comment from Rewatchable?
I mean, maybe. It could be.
Okay, so let's get into this because there is a lot to talk about. First, I'm going to discuss the series that I have read. And I won't pick favorites, asterisks, because they all are really fantastic. Like, I literally have not read a bad book yet from this imprint, and that's not even me being nice. Like, they're all so good, and once I start them, I have trouble putting them down. Sometimes life gets in the way, I will admit that, but they're all really fantastic. However, I definitely have a soft spot for the Pandava Quintet by Roshni Chokshi. And she writes about Hindu mythology, basically. And these books include Arusha and the End of Time, Arusha and the Song of Death, Arusha and the Tree of Wishes, Arusha and the City of Gold, and yet to come out, Arusha and the Nectar of Immortality. Those titles sound so cool.
Yeah.
Like, how could you not want to pick them up and read them?
For sure.
So this book is basically about, you know, this girl named Arusha who reminds me a little bit of Percy Jackson. She's a little bit of a troublemaker. She's got a little bit of sass. And she basically finds her sisters. They're all reincarnated souls of the Pandava brothers. So now it's the Pandava sisters. And she finds her sisters throughout the books and they go on adventures and talk to gods and celestial beings and stuff. And if you listen to last episode, she did have a short story in the Cursed Carnival book. And I just, like I said, I don't know if this is because this was the first series to come out of Rick Riordan Presents and I kind of just imprinted on it, or if I just would have loved it anyway, but either way, it's such a fantastic series, one of my favorites. And I think if you're looking for something that makes you feel a little bit like Percy Jackson made you feel, read this one.
I mean, it's understandable that the first one that comes out might be the one that you kind of like imprint on, like, I'd like this one the most. Yeah, it was the first one. It's totally fair. You're not playing favorites. It's okay.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, no, like it. That all just sounds crazy and fun, and you know, I haven't had a chance yet. Still, an episode later, I still haven't really read any of these. And while I'm, you know, I got an introduction through Cursed Carnival to a few of them. Yeah, mostly what I know about these, I've learned from hearing Karen talk about it. And just like what I've picked up from reading little bits and whatnot. And yeah, I will say Roshni Chokshi, her books keep coming up. Like, yeah. Since it's the first to come out, it's also the first to kind of get set aside when you have 13 other authors' books, you know, appearing into the world. So it's awesome that it's still being talked about. And I believe that's one of them that's been optioned.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's a possibility of maybe seeing that on screen at some point too, which is awesome.
I would be so excited if that were to actually happen. And again, if it's an animated show, I think this would work really well for that. But would love to see it live action too. Like, just give me all the things, please. Next up, we have Paula Santiago by Taylor K. Mejia. This is based on Mexican mythology, And the book titles in this one are River of Tears and Forest of Nightmares, which are out already. And the third one is Sanctuary of Shadows, which will be coming out in 2022. I recently read these. I read this one when the second book came out. So I read the first two back to back, and it was really worth it. And I'm glad I didn't have to wait. The first one actually ends very well in terms of like there not being a huge cliffhanger, but you just get dropped into this really interesting and unique world that I immediately wanted to go read the second one. And then the second one definitely ends with a cliffhanger. So just be warned, if you haven't read that yet, maybe wait until the third one comes out next August, because it's going to be difficult to wait, trust me, for a whole year. But I really liked this one because the first book, River of Tears, is based around the Mexican like folktale of La Llorona, which is the Weeping Woman, which has been used in a lot of horror films. Yeah. She's really creepy. Basically, like, her children died, or she killed her children. Depends on the story that you're told. And she kind of wanders riverbanks, calling out to them and stealing children, you know, to replace her own. And obviously, they end up dying. So, it's very creepy.
Yeah.
But this book, while this is one of the scarier books in the imprint, it might even be the scariest book in the imprint.
Perfect for Halloween.
Yes, definitely. It's still very kid-friendly. It's not that scary, but it creeped me out a couple of times. But there's also a lot to love in there. I think that if you listen to the last episode, you know that I am a big Bruto fan, and I don't think Kristen still knows who or what Bruto is.
Nope.
We're going to keep that a secret for now, but yeah, I really fell in love with these books quite quickly. And I will say that Paola is a really interesting character because she has a super scientific mind. She does not believe in anything outside of science, like no mythology, none of that. The stories that her mom and Dante's abuela tells her, like, she doesn't believe in it until she comes face to face with it. And then she has to kind of reconcile what she thought was real and what actually is real. And I think that's a really cool journey that she has to go on.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Next up is the Gifted Clans series by Gracie Kim. This is about Korean mythology, and the books in this series include The Last Fallen Star, which came out this year in 2021, The Last Fallen Moon, which will come out in 2022, and in 2023 it'll be The Last Fallen Realm, I think. Usually we don't get the titles until the previous book have come out. This was on one of the fandom pages, so I'm thinking that it's real, or maybe it was Wikipedia, but I haven't actually gone looking to make sure that it was 100%.
It may have accidentally slipped out somewhere, and somebody was just like, I'm going to casually add it to the wiki, and we'll just step away and not talk about it. So yeah, that could be the
thing. I mean, it fits the pattern, and it sounds really cool, so yeah. I think there's a big chance that that's it. So I really loved The Last Fallen Star, and I really love Gracie Kim. I think she's really cool. She's from New Zealand, and she loves food. She's obsessed with food. And in her books, she talks about food a lot and goes into detail about it, and basically just how it can, you know, make people feel better and how it gives you certain feelings of home or, like, reminds you of certain people. And I am also obsessed with food, so I really connected with that.
I will say, being a Top Chef fan,
yeah,
that is one of the things that I've taken away from that show is, like, people think about food and it's like, oh yeah, it's, you know, you eat food, you live, whatever, it's cool. But, like,
I've never been that way.
it can truly be an art form all its own. Like, creating a dish from the taste to the look to the, you know, all the ways you can cook things and all that. So I think it's a really cool idea to, like, marry that with mythology and, like, you know, cultural traditions and things. Like, that's so cool. And so I'm sure it goes over very well in her books. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, food has such high cultural importance, and especially in, like, Asian communities, the way that they eat with, like, shared plates and stuff like that, it is a coming together at every meal. It's vastly important, and just for, you know, it to take center stage in the book like that, I think is really important. And of course, I loved all of that. And her short story in Cursed Carnival had to do with enchanted food and magic and all that kind of stuff. And basically, this book is about witches who live in LA, kind of, you know, behind the scenes, and they belong to different clans, and it's got a very interesting story to it. And it's something that I haven't really read a whole lot about before, and I think it's really cool that, you know, yeah, there are mythological creatures and stuff, which we're used to seeing in Percy Jackson, but the fact that it's based around witches and magic is really new for some of this stuff. Usually get maybe a character who's like a witch and knows magic or something like that. But in this case, like all of the cast of characters pretty much other than the creatures are either human or witches. And I love it. I'm really excited to keep reading this series. Okay, next we have Thousand Worlds by Yoon-Ha Lee. This is also based around Korean mythology. The first book is called Dragon Pearl, and we thought this was a standalone novel. It will not be a standalone novel.
Not entirely.
That one came out in 2019, and I believe that was like the second or third book that came out of Rick Riordan Presents. I read it when it first came out in 2019. And the second book will be called Tiger Honor, which we just got in the mail the other day as an arc. So that was really exciting, and I definitely did a little dance when it showed up.
A little bit of inside baseball in case you don't know, but ARC, A-R-C, stands for Advanced Reader Copy. So no, it's not out in the world yet.
Yeah.
Karen's just really, really lucky and gets to hold it in her hands a little early so that she can get an idea of the story and, like, start writing stuff and all that fun.
Exactly. 10 years of writing at Hypebull means that, and, you know, several years of heading up the book section on Hypebull means that they trust me to hold on to the precious
to keep babies. The secrets.
Yeah. But, you know, the cover for this is just really cool, which that's out in the world and everything. And, it comes out in January 2022, so this will be, I think we're at a break right now. There are no more books now that Tristan Strong has come out, and I think the first one to come out next will be Tiger Honor, so that's really exciting. And that's actually like a companion novel, kind of a spinoff from, it follows a non-binary tiger spirit, and if you read Dragon Pearl or if you read Yoon-Ha Lee's short story in Cursed Carnival, you know that there are all types of, like, spirits and creatures and stuff. Dragon Pearl basically follows a fox spirit in space.
I mean,
yeah, so it's it's like a sci-fi novel, but it still blends that Korean mythology. It's really smart, it's really interesting, and, you know, I was satisfied with the ending of it and everything, but the world that he built creating that story was so rich, and it's literally all of space, and I feel like you can't just write one book, so
Star Trek's been doing, you know, how TV many? For how long? Yeah, you can't just write one book about all of space.
Yeah, so we're very excited about Tiger Honor, and I think, Kristen, you said that this was one of the books you were considering maybe jumping into first, just because, one, it's a standalone, makes it a little less scary, but two, like, you know, again, Teen Wolf, sorry to keep bringing it up, it's gonna keep happening. We kind of have a soft spot for fox spirits.
Yeah.
So, I think you'll like this one.
The history and the culture behind, like, fox spirits and how they show up in supernatural, you know, stories and all of that, it's so fascinating to me. So, yes, that is tempting. It's definitely dangling a little higher on the list than maybe some of the others. But I haven't yet made a decision.
Okay.
I'll figure it out one of these days.
Keep us posted. Yes. We want to know. The next series that I've sort of read was The Stormrunner by J.C. Cervantes. And that one, I have to admit, I've only actually read the first one, The Stormrunner. Not for any particular reason, but just because, this was the second book that came out And then it was Dragon Pearl. And I did read this one and I liked it, but for one reason or another, I just started getting bombarded with books and haven't actually gotten back into it. But I want to soon, especially because The Firekeeper and The Shadow Crosser are both out. This centers around both Mayan and Aztec mythology, I guess. I think it's kind of blended because J.C. Cervantes is also doing a spin-off series. And the first book in that series is called Throne of Sand, and that is, I think, specifically Aztec mythology. And it's going to be a duology, and the main character is Ren, who was in the previous series.
Gotcha.
So this book is cool because it centers around Zane, the main character, who has a disability and, you know, the struggles that he has as a kid, you know, who has to have a cane and stuff like that. And also the struggles he has with being destined to unleash evil.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's a lot to put on a kid's shoulders.
Yeah. Like, imagine. I mean, I guess we kind of get a little bit of that with Percy. Especially yeah. as we start to get into the chapters where we learn about the Oracle and the prophecies and all that.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Like, because with him, I'm trying to remember exactly what that first prophecy was. And, like, it was something about, like, it could be great, good, or great. I'm trying to remember now. Like, there's never been a prophecy where it's been clear that what's coming is good.
Yeah. That's 100% what prophecies are meant to be. You read it one way and then you find out, oh, I was wrong.
But, like, knowing that there's not really, like, a chance that they're mistaken. It could, like, if you're destined to unleash evil, like, that's a lot to take on as a kid.
Yeah, definitely. And you read the short story for this book, and this was the one where you said that the mythology kind of hits you all of a sudden, which is how I remember the book being, too. Like, it's just like, bam, you're dropped into the middle of it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But sometimes I like that because you're just like, let's just get to the fun part or, you know, the evil part. Sometimes they go hand in hand.
Right. It's
And then lastly for the books that I've read, and this one truly, truly pains me, is Sal and Gabby by Carlos Hernandez. And this pains me because I've only read the first book and I loved it. So the first book in this series is called Sal and Gabby Break the Universe. The second book is called Sal and Gabby Fix the Universe. That came out last year and I still haven't read it. I loved Break the Universe so much. It's basically another sci-fi story and they have the ability to like travel through space and time, which is very important if you read The Cursed Carnival and if you're like me and obsessed with the idea of all of Rick's stories, including all of the ones from the imprint, actually existing in either the same universe or parallel universes where they can actually visit each other. I'm just telling you right now, this is the book that could make it happen. So,
I mean, if you've got two characters that can travel through time and space, that, I mean, right there,
it fixes everything.
It opens all kinds of doors, yeah. And they're just sitting there waiting for, you know, other characters, you know, waiting for these two to go visit other characters and bring other characters along. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, no, that's cool.
The thing that I love, well, first of all, Carlos Hernandez is such a funny guy. He's got so much energy. We, like, when I watched the Cursed Carnival live event, he was sort of the ringmaster for everybody, and he was leading the charge on all the questions. And he's just so much fun, and I really enjoy kind of what he puts out into the universe. And this one is actually one of the few that isn't really based around mythology or anything like that. It's a sci-fi story, but the kids are, or at least one of the kids, I think maybe both of the kids, it's based around like Cuban culture and stuff like that. And they speak Spanish sometimes in the book. And he makes jokes about, you know, just that sort of thing. And it's really good. And the humor is so great. It's very like early Percy Jackson where it's a little bit silly, it's a little over the top, but it makes you laugh and then it kind of gets to the heart of the story and, you know, things can be very emotional and intense and it's just a really great balance of everything. I think this series is so good and I need to finish it.
No, it sounds fantastic. I mean, more space, please.
Yeah, yeah. We like space stories.
Space is fun.
Yeah. So then, of course, we had Cursed Carnival and Other Calamities, which, like we said, you can go back to last week's episode, episode number 2, and listen to us talk all about that. We kind of touch on every single story. It is spoiler-free, and you can hear more of our thoughts on that and how it might tie into the series that we're either familiar with or how it definitely overwhelmed Kristen because it was mythology overload.
It's okay. I think I'm almost entirely recovered.
Oh, that's good.
And if I did nothing else but be inspired to read some of these, then so be it.
Because, and then it did its job.
Right. Like, I may have been a little confused and a lot overwhelmed by all the different mythology all at once, but... you know, even being a little overwhelmed, I still got, like, a grain of what each of these stories is trying to share and, like, got a little taste of each of those mythologies and all the different, you know, cultural tradition things that were included in those short stories. So, like, it's enough to, like, just give you, you know, just wet your whistle a little bit, let you taste that what those series might be about. And so that's exciting.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to get into the books that I have not read for no particular reason other than, guys, I have to read a lot of books. For High School and now Subjectify, you should see our apartment. And that was after cleaning out half the books. It is full to the brim. I literally cannot take anymore. So, yeah, no particular reason other than life just got in the way, and I'm very excited to read all of these. I just gotta sit down and find time. I was hoping maybe this winter to find time because no new ones are coming out, so I want to try to read a couple of these. If that happens, I will let you know, and we'll figure out maybe how we want to handle, you know, each individual series or something like that. If you guys have any ideas, let us know. If you want us to do, you know, book by book or series by series, how we feel about them, and maybe either spoiler-free or talk about some of the specific plot points, let us know. We're chill. We'll do whatever you guys want us to do. Within reason.
We have veto power.
We do have veto power, yes. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about here is Tristan Strong by Kwame Mbalia. This is centered around West African mythology and sort of like the African-American experience and African-American mythology, which is always like, I don't think of America having mythology, but we do in a way. We have our folk tales and stuff like that in our stories, so... It's there's a lot of stuff in there. So the titles for this series include Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky, Destroys the World, and Keeps Punching. Pretty powerful titles.
Yeah.
They sound interesting. We love the covers for these.
Yeah.
They're so good. Oh, especially Keeps Punching just came out, and it looks incredible. And that in and of itself, I would probably be the reason why I picked it up and read it.
That title is just... so succinct, like, considering the first two kind of lay the groundwork, like, just Tristan Strong Keeps Punching.
Yeah.
Like, sure, yeah, I get it. Like, that's just really cool. I just think that's fun.
Yeah. So, this series is basically about Tristan Strong, and his friend dies in an accident, and he goes to his grandparents' house in Alabama to kind of get away from that environment and, you know, recover, I think, for the summer or something like that. And he has a notebook that his friend had been drawing in, I think. I have read, I believe, the first chapter of this book. And Gum Baby comes in. You remember Gum Baby, Kristen?
Oh, Gum Baby.
Gum Baby comes in and steals the notebook, and Tristan Strong races after her and tries to get it back, ends up punching a tree, and gets transported to another world.
As you do.
Yeah. I mean, totally normal, occurs at least every other day around here.
Punching trees, falling into parallel universes and other, you know, that's so cool.
Yeah. So this story, they've been running on Reed Riordan a couple of profiles that we talked about this week and last week. This week's was King Cotton, which we have concluded is a really creepy looking character. And yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to jump into there. And I'm very excited to pick that one up. I think it's a really good book for kids, not only for, you know, Black kids and stuff like that, but for everybody who might struggle with a friend's death or might struggle with their own strength and anger and things like that. There's just a lot going on there. The next book I want to talk about is Race to the Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse. This is centered around Navajo mythology. And this is one of the ones that hurts me the most for not having read, because I think it's a really cool concept. And I love anything to do with like Native American mythology and culture and stuff like that. And it's one of the standalones. So I feel like this one could be pretty easy to jump into right off the bat. And we haven't heard yet that it's going to have a sequel or a spinoff or a companion novel. This might be one of the only ones.
But it's possible. You never know.
You never know. And this one centers around Legend of the Hero Twins. And Nishoni can see monsters, basically, and her father works at an oil and gas company, which, again, I think is really topical and interesting. It's something that we have seen a lot in the news over the last few years, and I think it's really important to show kids kind of an insider point of view of how this is affecting people and entire communities.
Yeah. No, that's... very, very true. Because especially kids are not completely insulated from the world, obviously. Like, there are things going on that they don't understand and they get general ideas of from the news and from their parents and from people talking about, you know, around them. But it's good to be able to take that into a book like this that's really, really approachable, and it's really easy for them to be interested in it and then get an idea of what's going on in the world as well. Like, that's really valuable and really cool. So, yeah, gotta love that.
Plus, you get, like, monster hunting and stuff at the same time. Why not? That just makes it more interesting.
Like, yeah, for sure.
Next up is City of the Plague God by Sarwat Chadha. This is centered around Mesopotamian mythology, and we recently found out that City of the Plague God is getting a sequel, which is Rise of the Chaos Goddess, which sounds awesome. I'm obsessed with that title.
I'm all about chaos goddesses.
Yeah. And this one is really cool. Like, basically he said, you know, if City of the Plague God does well, there could be another one. It did well. We're getting another one. So pretty happy about that. Sarwat is one of the people who was on the Cursed Carnival live video, and I fell in love with him so quickly. He seems like such a funny guy. He's hilarious. He's got a lot of energy, and I really want to read this book. You read the short story and you said you really liked the tone of it and everything.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, this is the one where the hero is like in the kitchen with his family at their restaurant and a demon knocks on the door.
I think it was The Loneliest Demon. Yeah. I think that was the name of it.
I'm pretty sure. And that whole idea, just it's very interesting. And I think this one is also in the running for my first read, because it just, the way it introduced me to the world in that short got me hooked. Like, that was really, really fun and really interesting, and I really liked the way he wrote it, and so I'm it's edging, that one might be the one that I go with. I'm not sure yet.
I think you've said that 3 times so far.
Probably.
It is hard to choose, though. Uh-huh. Like, there are so many good books, and they all sound fantastic. And as I can attest, you know, to reading half of these at least, like, they all are fantastic once you get into them. And, yeah, it's going to be impossible to choose, but we must.
At some point, I will, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so last on the list of books that are out but I have not yet read is Pahua and the Soul Stealer by Lori M. Lee. And this is about basically the Hmong people and their mythology. This one came out recently, and I was so mad that I was in the middle of 1,200 other things and couldn't exactly pick this one up. But it looks really good. It looks really interesting. It sounds interesting. It's based on, like, you know, Southeast Asian people and mythology. The main character is a powerful shaman warrior child, who can see spirits. And her best friend is a cat spirit no one else can see, which is just amazing. Right. I love it.
I had not heard of the Hmong people prior to this past summer with the Olympics, but I believe Suni Lee is from the Hmong people, and, like, her family lives in Minnesota and all of that. But, like, just knowing that, like, I have, like, a real-world link to, like, you know, that it kind of adds a little something. So if you've heard that term recently, the name recently, and you were kind of wondering where you heard it, that might have been it, because there was definitely some discussion of, like, where she came from, and especially with the games being in Tokyo, like, it came up a lot. And so that just was one thing that I wanted to, like, throw out there. And I'm definitely interested. I mean, an invisible cat spirit, like,
yeah,
that's really cool.
That is really cool. We have a cat, and she's sassy. I wonder if this cat is sassy.
I'm still surprised she has not made an appearance on the podcast.
She will one day. You will hear her. She has a piercing meow when she wants attention.
If we ever record around dinner time, you'll hear her.
Yeah, that's true. 100%. By the way, I don't know if you noticed the other day, but Yoon tweeted his cat, and I replied with a picture of Callie, and he liked it.
I did. Yeah. I did see that.
I couldn't help it. I was like, we have one of those too.
So if you want to see a picture of our cat,
that's true.
You can find her on the internet.
Yeah, on Twitter. Please go follow us. I had a dream the other day that we had 100 followers, and I woke up and we did not have 100 followers. Please make my dream come true, everyone.
Literally, you can make Karen's dream come true.
Yeah.
That's power, man.
Public service.
Yeah.
Anyway. okay, so let's jump into the four books that we have coming out in the future, or I guess the four series. I think none of these are standalones. But this is what we know about them so far, basically. Okay, so the first book that we have coming up that isn't related to anything that's been out so far is Sirwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting by Roseanne A. Brown, which will be coming out in 2022 and centers around Ghanaian mythology. Now, I'm sorry if I pronounced that name wrong. Sirway, I've heard it like a couple of different ways depending on, you know, who's speaking it and what culture they're from and everything. This is actually, the name pronunciation is actual plot point in the book. Ah. So hopefully we'll find out the way that it should be pronounced according to Roseanne and everything. But we'll get there. Try my best so far. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is going to be a series, unlike the other ones, which I think might all be duologies. Yeah, the other three are duologies, but this one might be an actual series. So I'm going to read the synopsis real quick for this. And it goes, a 12-year-old is uprooted from her vampire hunting life after her childhood home is viciously attacked by shape-shifting vampires that mask themselves as harmless fireflies and is sent to the care of an aunt in Maryland for her own protection and forced to attend a normal school for the first time, but finds that vampire hunting in 7th grade don't quite mix. Now it's up to her to make warriors out of her classmates before they all become vampire food. What?
There's a lot in there.
Yeah. So, okay. First of all, vampire hunting. Yes. Very different for this imprint.
Mm-hmm.
Think that it's really cool. We love vampires. Buffy, the Vampire Diaries, like a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
We are pro vampire stories. Twilight back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm on board with that. Just in general.
Yes.
Shape-shifting vampires that mask themselves as harmless fireflies. I don't want to have to be afraid of fireflies.
I was going
to
say, it's taking you back to your Teen Wolf days, isn't it? Just a little bit.
The fireflies. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, the idea... I cannot wrap my head around the idea that fireflies are vampires, so we're not even going to try. Because, yes, fireflies are light and cute, and they come out in the summer, and I used to catch them and put them in jars. I don't want to think about the fact that there could have been vampires in the mix.
Yeah.
At least not right now. Not till we have the book in hand a chance to figure out what's going on. But I do love the idea of her making warriors out of her classmates.
Yeah.
Like I know I said this the last time we recorded this. The Shang-Chi, like, connection there of, like, when Shang-Chi and Awkwafina's character got to the special little place, they both, like, instantly had warrior training. Like, Shang-Chi had had it before, but Awkwafina's character had not. And, like, suddenly she's thrown into, like, learning to shoot a bow and, like, all this cool stuff. So this makes me think of that for some reason.
This makes me think of, like, kind of Buffy, kind of Teen Wolf, where, you know, like, the main character is the person with the powers. And, like, some of the other ones also have powers, but, like, Buffy had to get Willow and Xander and Cordelia to help her slay vampires and stuff. And then you had Scott and Stiles and Lydia and all of that, like, trying to figure out this world of mythology as teenagers. I think that it's very much in that vein, and this just sounds so different that I'm really, really excited for this one. And luckily, it's coming out soonish, so that's very exciting.
Yay!
And I think this is the one book where Rosanna Brown said that she wanted to do something where the main character didn't discover they had powers, like they already knew that they did. And so it was kind of exploring that, and it's a twist on like all these other coming of age, coming into the mythological world like the other ones. So. Yeah,
which is a cool new way to kind of get into.
And that's sort of like Gracie Kim's book, The Last Fallen Star. Like, she knows about the powers and everything already. And Pahua and the Soul Stealer, like, she's a shaman warrior child. So she obviously knew something. Know. Yeah. But I think it's a really interesting twist to have them already be aware. So I like that. Next up, we have Ballad and Dagger by Danielle Jose Older. This is Santeria mythology, and I'll admit I had to look this up. I've heard of it before, but I couldn't define it or anything. But it's sort of like an Afro-Caribbean religion that combines West African, Yoruba religion, Roman Catholicism, and Spiritism. Which in and of itself is, I feel like, just opens the world to some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a duology. This is also the only one so far that is a young adult novel. I can't wait. I'm super, super excited about that because we tend to read either young adult or adult stuff. I mean, I read a lot of middle grade because of Rick. But other than that, I tend to mostly read young adults. So I think it's really cool that the imprint is opening its doors to young adult stuff. I think that's only going to further bring in more authors with more stories. And
agreed. Yeah.
I'm excited. Okay, so the synopsis for this one reads, Ballad and Dagger introduces readers to Mateo Matisse, born in San Madrigal, an island in the Caribbean that for centuries provided a refuge for pirates, Sephardic Jews fleeing the Inquisition, and Cuban santeros. After the island is destroyed by a freak hurricane, a vibrant diaspora emerges in Brooklyn. 15 years later, Mateo, now a teen and a piano prodigy, lives with his two aunts, one alive, the other a spirit. While he is playing the piano at the San Madrigal Grande Fete, a raucous annual party, gods and magical creatures appear, resulting in street battles breaking out between the three neighborhood factions. During the melee, Mateo discovers that he has healing abilities. One person seems to know what's going on, Chela Hidalgo, the rabbi's daughter, who, like Mateo, possesses newly discovered secret powers. Mateo and Chela set aside their differences to unravel the mystery behind their sunken homeland and to stop a dangerous political operative who's trying to harness their powers to unleash a whole new terror on the world. That was a long synopsis.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So before we get into that, let me read this other blurb that I found about this. The book is based on the author's own experiences as a Cuban Jewish man, Santeria priest of 10 years, protest medic, and music lover. I'm sorry, what? Like, who is this person?
Right.
What has he seen? I'm so curious. I guess we're going to find out.
Right. It sounds like it.
There was a lot in this synopsis. I think the things I'm most interested about is just seeing like what kind of creatures or what kind of like mystical stuff is going to come out of this, because it talks about gods and magical creatures appearing, and like that's where my brain goes first. I'm like, I want to know what sort of gods and I want to know what sort of creatures.
Meanwhile, my brain is going, oh, so the rabbi's daughter and him don't get along. That's fun.
Enemies to lovers.
I'm sure they will start to get along the way. Yeah, no, there's something about, like, two people who don't see eye to eye and, like, have never really been friends or whatever, like, being forced into a situation where, like, they're the only resource they have. Like, they're the only other person who knows about all this and who can help and all that, and being forced to kind of work together and seeing where it goes from there. That's always good fun. But I also love the idea that this is based in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed a lot of these stories, like, they're about all these interesting cultural mythologies and folklores and whatnot, but a lot of them take place in the United States, which I think is kind of fun, and it makes it really, really approachable and interesting, you know, because not everyone lives in the United States. But it's, like, it's an entry point where, like, I think we all kind of have a chance to step into it and get used to the world. And, like, it's like, oh, okay, so, like, I can identify, like, with Sarwat Shahda's book, like, I kind of know what Brooklyn and, like, what New York City would look like, and Manhattan, I think, is where that one is set. So it's like I have an idea of what that would look like and sound like and feel like. So then to have a demon knock on the back door, you're like, oh, so this thing that I have hard time trying to, like, imagine and, like, not be freaked out by, it becomes a lot easier to, like, read on and feel that. So I love that there's so much going on in this synopsis that to set it in Brooklyn gives me a way to get into the story without feeling like I know nothing.
Yeah.
Because I know nothing about anything else in this. So I'm like, I'm really excited to start off in a place I kind of have some familiarity with and move on from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, with Rick's books, like, because he is an American author, obviously it made sense to set Percy in, like, New York City, and he traveled all across the country, and then Rick lives in Boston, and so the Magnus Chase books were set in Boston and everything, and he included some of the things that he had noticed about Boston, like a lot of the homeless children, in his story to kind of bring more awareness to that. And I think you're right, like, when you set something totally, like, out of this world, literally in some cases, against a very normal backdrop, it does make it a little bit easier to consume, and it makes it easier to pretend too. Like, I used to read books and I used to go, you know, if it was set in America, maybe in a small town like I grew up in, I believed that it was possible for me to experience these wonderful magical things too. And as a kid, like, you're just, and an adult, I'll admit, I still do it. I still want my Hogwarts letter to come and stuff, so.
I mean, I've been to the top of the Empire State Building. I looked around, all right? I did. So, you know.
It's very hard not to when you grow up being fascinated by books and wanting magic to be real, so.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know if I mentioned this before, but Ballad and Dagger comes out May 2022. So that one's also not very far away. Yeah. So we'll definitely have to jump on that one. Next on our list is Winston Chu versus the Whimsies by Stacy Lee. This one also comes out in 2022. This is a duology and it's based around Chinese mythology. And the synopsis reads, a modern day reimagining of a classic Chinese folktale following Winston Chu as he saves the owner of a curiosities shop from a robbery, only to be gifted a broomstick and a dustpan for his trouble, items that turn out to be more a curse than a blessing. I mean, I would be kind of upset if I saved the day and somebody handed me a broomstick and a dustpan.
Like, what?
Yeah. I remember last time we were talking about the title for this one, Winston Chu versus the Whimsies. It sounds fun. It sounds very middle grade. I want to know what the Whimsies are.
Right.
They sound like they're troublemakers.
Yeah.
I have to say that.
Yeah. No, that sounds about right. I think of, like, pixies and, like,
yeah,
I don't know if that's what they are, but that's what where my brain goes. It's to, like, little tiny winged creatures that are, like...
Yeah, who like to cause trouble.
Yeah.
This is Stacey Lee's debut middle grade novel, so I think that's really cool that she got to branch out from her usual fare and do a middle grade novel. Again, I'm going to say this for literally every single one, but I'm very much looking forward to this. I think it sounds really good and cute, and I really want to know what's up with this broomstick and dustpan.
Yeah.
And why they're more of a curse than a blessing.
For sure.
Last on our list is Moco Magic by Tracy Baptiste. This is based around Caribbean mythology. This is also a duology. This is the one we have to wait until 2023 to get, but I think that's okay because there are going to be plenty of books in the meantime.
Yes, for sure.
The synopsis reads, the book follows a young Moco Jumbi, a protective spirit who walks on stilts, is learning about her divine powers when she finds a rogue Moco Jumbi is planning to capture power during a festival in Brooklyn. I got the synopsis from like the fandom page, and it says a rogue Mono Jumbi. I'm wondering if that's a typo or not. I'm not really sure. But either way, quite a short synopsis compared to the other ones because this book isn't that close to coming out yet.
Right.
But I like the idea that it follows a protective spirit. And that it basically has to fight one of her own, and it's during a festival in Brooklyn, again.
Another festival.
Yeah.
I like festivals.
Yeah, festivals are fun. And lots of stuff set in New York City.
Which, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there's just always stories about New York City, and especially because it's such a diverse place, there's a lot of culture there and everything, that it would make sense that a lot of these communities, you know, in the real world, a lot of these communities settle in New York City and grow from there and become their own little, like, community. I
mean, each neighborhood in New York City has different, you know, settlements of, like, people, you know, it's just kind of become that way, where you've got, you can walk five blocks and kind of move from one community into another. Like, yeah, so it makes sense that so many of these might start in Brooklyn or might start in New York somewhere, just because it is kind of that entry point.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think all of this sounds so good. So, once again, just a ton of books, a lot of variety here. I mean, there's something that somebody will like, you know, at least one book. But for sure. I really truly think that if you like one, you're gonna like a lot of the others. Not because they're similar, because they really are not. All of the books are very, very different. But it's the idea behind the book, where you have a young kid dropped into a mythological world or trying to navigate a mythological world that they're already aware of. And if you like magic and mythology and creatures and cool sidekicks and magical powers, like, how could you not fall in love with these books?
Right, exactly.
I'm trying to pitch this to people who have probably already read, like, all of these so far, but, you know.
I mean, there's a good chance.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely let us know which ones you like best. I'm very curious to hear that. Very curious, again, how you guys would like us to handle each of these individual series, because I would like to do deeper dives into some of them. I think they all deserve a lot of attention, and maybe we can talk with the authors and stuff like that, too, at some point. So, we'll just have to see. But for now, we're going to wrap up this episode with our chapter reviews. So, take it away, Kristen.
Okay, this episode, we get to discuss chapters 5 and 6 of Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. Chapter 5 is where we'll start, of course. It is entitled, I Play Pinochle with a Horse.
I had to Google how to say that.
Pinochle?
Horse. No, gee. Yes, pinochle.
I mean, that would have been.
That would have been.
Very interesting.
Quite a twist. But yeah, I had seen the word before, but like, I had never really heard it out loud. So I was like, I'm going to Google this before we get on.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand that. It's not exactly how you would guess it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't necessarily look like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's dig in here a little bit, and we'll start this time. We'll start with the notes. We'll start with our general impressions of this chapter. We get our first look at Camp Half-Blood through Percy's eyes, because he's sitting on the porch with Chiron and Mr. D and Grover. our favorite. And they're, you know, they're playing cards. So we kind of get, Percy has a chance to look out from the porch and see a lot of Camp Half-Blood, which he has, you know, the just basic reaction to that. But it's interesting to kind of see it through his eyes. We also learn about Mr. D, why he's the camp director and who he really is, which is all good fun and interesting. And I mean,
yeah, I am kind of obsessed with Mr. D. I was not expecting this to happen, to be honest, because he's kind of, you know, he's kind of a dour character throughout the series, but I feel bad for him. Mm. Which is weird because I think that, I mean, okay, maybe the punishment was a little harsh, like 100 years of having to drink Diet Coke. Not that you would mind. You would probably love
that. Sounds like heaven.
Yeah. But he can't have any wine or anything like that. It's kind of a big punishment. But the reason why I like him so much is just because he pretends like he doesn't want to be there, but he actually does care about these kids and he does want to keep them safe, and he might grumble about it the entire time, but when it comes down to it, he's going to defend them like he would anybody else. And I think that's maybe admirable is not the right word, because, you know, if he had maybe a better attitude, we could say that, but I think it betrays the kind of person he actually is, which is a good person, a good god, and the way that he ends up coming around to Percy after all of those books, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, gotta love Mr. D. I mean, you're right, like, he is kind of hard to love sometimes, because especially of the things he says.
Yeah, and the way that he treats Grover and stuff, like, yeah. That actually made me really sad. I didn't think that he deserved that, poor Grover, but
yeah. I mean, at this point in Percy's series, we don't know what came before, but we do get a little hint that Grover has not fared so well in his job previously. And so that's more or less where Mr. D's, like, disappointment and his gruffness is coming from. And it's still not, like, an excuse, because that's just not nice. You don't treat people like that. But we do kind of, we're starting to get more information about how everything came to be the way it is and why Grover was the one protecting Percy and, like, all of that. So, while I'm sad for Grover, it's okay. We know he'll be okay. So
that's that is true.
We also got our first experience with both Ambrosia and Nectar in this chapter. And we get Percy's kind of explanation of what it tastes like, and like the weirdness of it too, I think is also fun, because we see both Annabeth, like, kind of spoon feeding Percy this random thing, but then we also see Percy, like, drinking the nectar on his own, and, like, Grover being really into it as well, which is good fun.
I liked that whole, you know, drinking a glass of liquid and it being like warm cookies, like, that must be, it sounds gross, but it tastes so good that his brain was probably like, I hate it, I like it, I don't know how to feel about it, but it's making me, like, heal and feel amazing. So
I mean, chocolate chip cookies are probably one of my very favorite desserts, and, like,
I don't want to drink it though.
I know. Well, and that's it's hard to, like, justify, like, I can't imagine drinking one. I can't imagine drinking, like, a really smooth liquid that tastes exactly like one. Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
I'm a texture person. Yeah. That would freak me out. But, like, if I was presented with something and I tasted it and it tasted exactly like my mother's, like, chocolate chip cookies, like, that's a very specific flavor. So I can only imagine. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I really liked this because this chapter really blows the whole world open. I mean, between the nectar, the ambrosia, Mr. D, and, like, there's a lot of exposition here, but it's not boring at all. You get an explanation of Mount Olympus and the power of the gods, and that really stuck with me. I mean, I read this book a couple of times over the last, like, you know, 10 years or so, but that part in the story about how the seat of power of the West moves, and now it's in New York City with the United States, just really stuck with me. And I think that so far we've had a lot of questions raised and then a lot of action, and now we're getting exposition. But like I said, it's not boring because you're chomping at the bit to get answers to all these questions that you have, and now you're finally getting them, and that's so exciting that I was just drinking it all in.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right, we can probably move into our favorite quotes. I'll start. Mine is it's basically in Percy's head. I'll just go with it. He says, "I imagine she was going to say, 'You killed a Minotaur,' or 'Wow, you're so awesome,' or something like that. Instead, she said, 'You drool when you sleep.'"
Annabeth. More Annabeth, please.
I was gonna just choose "you drool when you sleep" and, like, leave it at that, but I'm like, you kind of need Percy's explanation of, like, what he was thinking, because it sets the stage for Annabeth and Percy for, you know, 10 books to come.
Yeah,
because really. they have this perfect little dynamic, like, mm-hmm. down pat, where he expects that she's gonna think that he's, like, awesome, and then she comes in and drops reality on his head. Yeah. And, like, you drool when you sleep. Yeah. I'm gonna go. See you later. Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
Mine was also in Percy's head, and he goes, "I was alone, an orphan. I would have to live with Smelly Gabe? No, that would never happen. I would live on the streets first. I would pretend I was 17 and join the army." And Percy's just so dramatic. And, like, to be fair, I would also not want to live with Smelly Gabe.
No.
And I would consider living on the streets. But it's just, he was so dramatic about it, and it really made me laugh, despite the fact that he's talking about the fact that he technically is an orphan now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a sad, but also over dramatic, like, yeah, it is. It's just really fun. Gotta love it. Okay, we'll move into our favorite moments. Those times in the story where there isn't really a quote to explain why you love this thing so much. We give our favorite moments. Mine was Grover being curious about what the nectar that Percy was drinking tastes like. We kind of discussed a little bit about the chocolate chip cookies. But, like, I love that I'm not entirely certain, but I believe that Grover, as a satyr, can't have...
I think you're right.
Ambrosia and nectar. Because, like, they come from the gods, and...
I think you have to be a demigod or a god to...
Yeah. So, like, I just imagine, like, Grover's been in camp and surrounded by demigods for a long time, and they go off, you know, like, they have battles, or they, you know, get hurt on their way to camp, and they have to have ambrosia or nectar to kind of heal them, and he, this whole time, has no idea what it tastes like. And so I can picture him, like, getting up the courage to ask someone, because I feel like it's kind of a personal thing, like, what nectar tastes like. So, like, you may not ask everyone, because it's kind of that, you know, it's a personal question. Like, yeah, you don't necessarily want to share that with everybody. So I love that he gets up the courage to ask Percy, and it's like, he's really curious about, like, what it tastes like for him, and how it feels to drink a chocolate chip cookie. Like, that's, yeah. It's kind of weird.
Ew.
Karen, what's your favorite moment?
My part, well, I did write all of Mr. D. I take that back, minus the part where he was mean to Grover. But aside from that, like I said, I just found Mr. D really fascinating this time around. And I can't wait to get more scenes from him, because I think that he's hilarious, first and foremost. But I can't wait for the payoff down the line when he's like, "Percy Jackson..." Or he never calls Percy Percy, does he? He always calls him something else.
Yeah. There's a myriad of names.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
And for him to just be like, "Good job." Like, that's all I need. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Right. Okay. I think that pretty much wraps up chapter 5. So now we will move into chapter 6. I become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom.
Gotta love it.
This makes me think of Big Brother from this past summer. If anyone else watches Big Brother, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because one of my favorite house guests had a punishment where he had to wear a weird costume for a week, but he was Lord of the Bathroom and he had to stand next to the bathroom, and every time somebody like had to use it, he would announce them, and like it was really weird, but
that would be goofy. So embarrassing.
It was, and everybody hated it because it was like, I don't want people to know when I need to use the bathroom. But that makes me think of, you know, this makes me think of that. Anyway, moving on. Because this is a Percy Jackson podcast, not a Big Brother podcast. We're going to dive in real quick here and get into our notes. This is the chapter where we meet camp. Like, this is the one where Percy is shown around. He has a couple of different tour guides because Chiron kind of starts the walk, and then Annabeth takes over about halfway through. So he's introduced to the cabins. We see him given a bed in cabin 11 and experiencing the chaos of cabin 11.
Yeah.
Because it's a busy place.
Yeah, definitely. While I was reading this description of Camp Half-Blood, I kept looking up at the map that Kristen got me, which sits right above my desk. I think this was for my birthday or Christmas, like a couple of years ago. And it basically just like, you know, shows the Long Island Sound and the camp and everything's laid out. And I was like, ah, this is cool. Like reading it and looking at that at the same time. It was really neat.
Good fun. Good fun. We also experience Annabeth telling him how she knows that he's a half-blood, and like, I think that might be the first time he hears that term, so, you know, it's a big introduction. And then finally, this chapter ends with Clarice interrupting them and giving Percy a chance to show off in the bathroom.
Yeah. This sounds kind of bad.
Gross.
Yeah, it does.
I didn't even think about that. No, but I mean,
Percy. It does happen, though.
I mean, I would think as a demigod and a son of Poseidon, which he does not know yet.
Right.
Anytime, if you have to choose a room to be, like, accosted in, the bathroom's not a bad option.
Yeah, there's a lot of firepower there for
right?
you.
Right, right. Literally.
Choose the room you're accosted in. That's funny.
So, you know, not the worst situation possible, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Did you have any other notes?
I did. I had a couple. My first one was that I was definitely getting Dumbledore vibes from Chiron because, you know, I trust him a lot and I like him, I think, a lot more than I ended up liking Dumbledore in the end. It still makes me mad that he's purposely keeping Percy in the dark, even though I understand why. Like, he is trying to protect him, but what books have we read where keeping the main character in the dark has actually really benefited them? I mean, the bad guys always come after them eventually anyway, and them not knowing how to deal with them usually causes problems. Like, I don't know, Percy's mom disappearing into a shower of golden light.
Right.
So I was getting a little mad at Chiron about that. And like, yeah, the Dumbledore vibes, not about it.
Yeah. It's rough.
What else was in here? Oh, yeah, I did have a question about whether Chiron knew Percy was probably Poseidon's son, and that's why he pulled him back from Cabin 3 like that. And, I mean, I think that there are already rumors going around that he's potentially one of the big three, and there was just something weirdly subtle about the way that Chiron kind of, like, stopped him from going in. And I think, like, you mentioned this last time, like, there's this thing where you don't go into the cabins.
Yeah.
Especially the big three cabins, because they're, like, sort of off limits. But I don't know, maybe I'm reading way too much into it, but I felt like Chiron probably knew that he was Poseidon's son. And I don't remember if later on in the book we get confirmation of that or not.
See, I kind of had the opposite, where I wasn't... I think Chiron was worried because of this possibility that Percy was the son of one of the big three, the consequences of, like, Zeus's child stepping into
Poseidon's cabin
would be really bad. Like, yeah. I can see that being a thing, you know, could have disastrous results, basically. So I thought it was more of he didn't know, and because he had no idea, he wanted to keep Percy from getting himself into trouble. We all know why Percy's drawn to Cabin 3.
Yeah.
I mean, and pretty soon everybody else is going to figure out why he's drawn to Cabin 3.
I mean, and if you're Annabeth and you saw what you just saw, like, you would put two and two together. I don't think that it would be very hard to think that he was probably son of Poseidon.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that after seeing what went down between Percy and Clarice, I'm pretty sure a lot of people at camp are guessing.
Yeah.
Like, anybody who saw Clarice dripping wet, running away, you know, running away from the bathroom, like, it starts to make you wonder.
Yeah. Especially since she's so big and scary, so.
Yeah.
The last thing that I wanted to talk about was, we had discussed in a previous episode how old Grover was, and we actually do get confirmation here that he is 28 years in Satyr, but they age twice as fast as humans, so he's technically 14 years in human years.
Twice as slow?
Twice as slow as
humans? Because, like, he's twice, 28 years old.
Right. But he looks 14, so he ages twice as slow. You're right.
It's okay. I just wanted to make sure nobody got confused.
Yeah. I mean, it's still confusing, but I think, so his little business cards, you know, make sense. He's 28 years old, but he looks 14, so that made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at our favorite quotes and our favorite moments. I will start. Mine is, look, is there anything we can say without it thundering?
Oh, Percy, you have a long way to go. There's going to be a lot of thundering in your future.
So much sass, and he doesn't have any idea
he doesn't.
What's about to hit him.
That's funny. My favorite line was right after the bathroom incident with Clarice, where he go, like, she's trying to, like, fight him again. And he goes, "You want to gargle with toilet water again, Clarice? Close your mouth." And it was such a zinger. Like, it was such a comeback for Percy that I don't know that, you know, he doesn't always have that energy. And this is the first time he's meeting Clarice, and he just tells it like it is, and I loved it. It was such, like, a fist pump moment for me.
It's like our first glimpse at, like, battle sassy Percy.
Yes. Because
he does get kind of battle sassy. Like, every time he's fighting somebody, he gets this extra surge of, like, confidence, and he's like, all right, here we go. Like, so this is our first real glimpse of that.
Oh my gosh. If the title of this episode isn't battle sassy, then I don't know what is.
Then we've done something wrong.
Yes.
All right. And our favorite moments. For me, I really liked that while Chiron...
Hello, Kelly.
Speak of the devil.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Debbie.
I think we'll have to leave that one in. We're almost done.
Almost. Okay, so, yes, while Chiron was showing Percy around camp, Percy notices the big house attic, because something moves in front of the window, and starts to kind of pepper Chiron with a bunch of questions. And Chiron just kind of moves him along and is like, nothing living lives up there. Let's keep moving. Like, you know, pushes him along. Because there's a lot going on in that attic that he does not want to have to explain
and
to Percy.
And he didn't lie. There is nothing living up there.
Nope.
So
at the moment, nothing living in the attic. That is for sure. So yeah, I love that moment just because it's foreshadowing a thing that is going to become a huge part of this whole series.
Yeah, definitely. My favorite moment was the explanation that monsters are archetypes and they will reform eventually. And like I said before, there was a lot of exposition between these two chapters, but it's so interesting, especially if you're, you know, somebody obsessed with mythology and everything. Just the way that this world works and knowing that the Minotaur is the Minotaur, and it's never actually going to die. It might just take a couple hundred years to come back or something like that. I think that's super interesting. And I was rereading a passage from House of Hades the other day for something else, and they actually show in that book, like, them starting to reform, and then I think they have to, like, try to stop it from happening. But I, like, just that concept visually and conceptually is so interesting to me.
Yeah, and I like what it offers the series. Like, first of all, Percy, like, it gives Percy this whole, you know, selection of his mythological baddies that we have heard of, like the Minotaur, and like, you know, we'll come across some other ones in the future, but like, we've already heard of the Furies, and he's had to, you know, fight one of them too. So it's really cool to like think that these really old ancient beings aren't dead. Like, this is the actual Minotaur that he's fighting, mm-hmm. and that there's also built-in history now. Like, Percy has defeated the Minotaur, and now the Minotaur will remember that Percy has defeated him. So, like, if he shows up again, he's going to remember that and probably be pissed. And so, like, that's all kind of fun, and it just makes the world that much more, like, layered and interesting and all of that, so.
Yeah. And plus, like, the constant bad guys, like, that it just cycles through them over and over again. And I don't think it gets stale in that way. I think it becomes more interesting because it's like, oh, you again.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. Didn't you get enough of this the first time?
It just adds a little something.
Yeah.
But that pretty much wraps up our discussion of Chapter 6. It was good fun. These were two really good chapters.
Yeah.
A lot of information and a lot of build up to what we all know is coming.
Didn't you say last time you almost read ahead?
I did. It took
calling you out.
It took some restraint, but I almost did because I was like, I know, you know, the next like two chapters, like it's not, you know, it's not that long, and I know what's coming, so it's okay. No, but I stopped myself. I was like, nope, we cannot read ahead. Stay on task. Two chapters, put it down, and I did. So it was hard, but I did it.
Yeah, good job.
All right, and that pretty much wraps up our episode. Thanks for hanging
out
with us. I know, right? Thanks for hanging out with us, and we hope you found some really great new books that you want to read and maybe thought about Percy for a little bit, too. But if you would like to contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. Or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Subjectify Media, or on Apple. And if you do find us on Apple, 5-star reviews are a really big help in helping other people find the podcast and just, you know, keeping us relevant. So, yeah, definitely if you listen to us on there, make sure to review us. Thanks so much. And lastly, if you reach out to us, feel free to reach out with questions, comments, ideas for content you might want to see, anything. We love hearing from you. And this episode, we have our first Twitter feedback.
Woo!
It's just exciting
it is.
To be back talking about Percy and, you know, on a podcast, which is good fun. Our first bit of feedback comes from Haley Marie Grant at Haley Marie Grant 2. And she just says, I love this great podcast. And we just want to say thank you for listening and for being a fan. That's really good fun. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Karen, do you want to take the other one?
Yes, I do, because this one is from Leah, perpetually exhausted, at Leah TA11, who has been a longtime listener of None Other Teen Wolf podcast and friend of Hypeable, and we've been Twitter friends for a while now, and she's awesome. And basically, she quote tweeted our intro tweet and said, I'm so excited for this. We are so excited you're listening. Thank you for listening. Thank you for following us over here, and please spread the word because we're really excited about this, and we really love Percy Jackson, and we want to talk to people who love Percy Jackson as much as we do.
And with that, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.